Saturday will mark exactly a month since Christmas. After weeks of heavy-duty celebrating, we got to New Year's Day, and boom, holiday season over, fewer parties and celebrations. But January is not devoid of events. Thank goodness for crabs. It's crab season in the ocean, and that's cause for celebration in some coastal communities. Saturday is the day of Southern Oregon Crab Fest in Brookings, with several events on tap. Robert Gross is one of the organizers of Crab Fest and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Appreciate you helping us out with the Crab Fest.
So tell us about the crab season itself. It didn't start terribly long ago, I understand.
No, it started a little bit late to give the crab a little more time to get a little bit bigger. And it's been a tough season. I was told by the crabbers last year that the port usually processes about 15 million pounds of crab every year. And this year they're hoping to do a little less than a million. It's been real tough for the crabbers this year, but the nice thing is we've got plenty of crab for the Crab Fest, and a lot of the crabbers have stepped up and said, "Hey, we're getting you crab, Robert. Don't worry about it. We're taking care of it." So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Really? So that's a sharp reduction then, if we're talking 15 million pounds last year down to a million pounds thus far this year.
It is. Last year was a great year, but it's called fishing for a reason. It's not catching, I guess.
How long has Crab Fest been going on?
You know what? This is our first annual Crab Fest, and what happened is the city of Brookings and the port of Brookings Harbor kind of got together and said, wouldn't it be nice to have some off-season events here? We're a tourism town here along the coast, beautiful weather. People, come in the summertime, and we've got lots of RVs and camping and so forth. But in the wintertime, we've got a lot of history with timber and fishing. So we thought about some different ideas, and Crab Fest was one that thought, hey, this is a great idea. We have so many crab boats here. We have such a nice harvest. Let's see if we can do something off-season. And they got behind this and helped us and encouraged us to go ahead and start a Crab Fest this year. So we're trying to make it an annual event. And this year, we've got, because of the weather here, you don't know what you're going to get, whether it's going to be bright and sunny like it is going to be this weekend, 62 degrees and partly cloudy, or it could rain. So we got a giant tent for all of our vendors, 6,000 square feet. We'll be having crab races. Several of the boats are coming down and be able to sell crab directly from the dock. And the biggest thing is I don't know about you, but I've watched Deadliest Catch before many times, and those crab boats interest me. So the crabbers have said, hey, come on over, bring your kids, bring your young ones, and take a look at how a crab boat operates. And I think that's one of the neat things, because what we're really trying to do is promote the crab experience and learn about crab. It just isn't a regular festival. We're trying to make it so it's all about the crab. That's what we're trying to do.
So, Robert Gross, how big a fleet is there for bringing crab in Brookings?
I'm not quite sure, but I know by looking out there's probably 40 to 50 boats, and I know that some people bring smaller boats, the 25 and 30 footers, where they have fewer pots and process a little less, and they'll drop in and do their fishing and then go back to wherever they live. I know this year, because the harvest has been kind of low, some of them decided to pull up early, some of them went north or south, crab are an elusive bunch, so I understand that they can walk 100 miles in a season. So.
Really?
That's what I was told, yeah.
Okay. This is kind of like OR7 sorts of measurements.
Absolutely.
We talked about the wolf this week, too. We're talking about Southern Oregon Crab Fest in Brookings with Robert Gross, who's one of the organizers. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. We are talking Dungeness crab as the primary
That is correct.
Catcher.
That
okay.
is correct. Yes.
So the boats are coming in and out in kind of a shuttle thing. They're going out to set the pots, and then they come back in with the pots full later on.
And then that's correct. And then they go here, and then they go everywhere. I know that live crab is delivered from here to San Francisco, and they even go northbound up to Portland, too. So it just depends on what the supply and the demand is. But this year, the crabs, I've been told they're very big. They're just sparse. So some of them have just not had great season so far. We did have on the crab boat note, we all know that it's kind of dangerous going out there in the seas, especially here, in the Pacific Northwest. We actually had the 62-foot Joe Marie actually sank, was blown into the jetty on its way in here just a couple days ago, and I believe it's still underwater right now, right outside our jetty. They were lucky enough to save the four souls on board, but I understand, unfortunately, a pet was lost. So But what it does is it reinforces, you know, the danger. These guys go out there, and they're out there without any support or protection, and sometimes these things happen. And so, you know, as much as we're celebrating Crab Fest, we also want to give thanks to the guys that go out there and put these great things on our table.
Well, we're certainly glad to hear they're okay, but a 62-foot boat then went down.
Wow. Yep. It's not fun. It's a big event here, and luckily, you know, everything's taken care of, and the Coast Guard is right here. I believe that we're the busiest recreational port here along the Oregon coast, and they were right there and able to help out. So that was good. You know, it would have maybe been different had they been 15, 20 miles off the coast.
So. Yeah, it could have been very different. So they're right there. When you're talking about a 62-foot boat going down near the jetty, then is that a navigational hazard for boats,
you know,
coming in and out?
It has been. Luckily, the boats are still able to get in and out, because that would obviously compounded the issue here. But no, the Coast Guard has done a great job of containing it and making sure there's no pollution or things like that. I understand that they're going to float it up and then bring it over to the dock and lift it out here in the next couple days. You know, it does take a little bit of time to get it all together. But, you know, for Crab Fest, we're just excited that people can come over, see the great weather over here. You know, it's going to be 60-plus degrees, you know, partly cloudy. It's just going to be a lot of fun. We've got some beer gardens there. We've got vendors, local vendors that we focused on the people that make things that are either crab related or nautical related, and we're trying to give an emphasis to, you know, the crab experience like we talked about before.
So this is what the tourist people refer to as the shoulder season. It is not the head of the tourist season by any stretch of the imagination over there.
No.
How different is a winter in Brookings from a summer in Brookings? And of course, a lot of people refer to this as Southern Oregon's banana belt.
Yes, yes, we do have a kind of a microclimate here. It's warmer than even 30 miles north or south of here. It was a bit of a risk when we sat down to think about dates and things like that as far as weather's concerned. Luckily, this last week of January, the last few years, has been very, very blessed for us. You know, today we're going to be in the high 60s. Tomorrow it might actually get to 70 degrees. 70 degrees in the middle of January, or near the end of January, is pretty amazing. In this kind of thing, the town itself is excited to have people come in, being a tourist town, to come in off-season and see what we've got. So there's a lot of businesses and so forth that are down at the port that do very well during the summertime, because we've got tourists all over the place. But here in the wintertime, it's great. It's great for the businesses. It's great for the local motels. And it's great for the enthusiasm of the community. We've had a giant crab that's as the size of a motorhome, believe it or not, that we've been moving around town for the last week, and it's gotten the town excited. And his name is Louie, and we've been having a great time with him. And everybody here is just excited to get, you know, for the first annual Crab Fest, getting it all under the books and getting the dinner. I didn't mention that before, but we have a dinner for 250 people that's been sold out for about a week, that under the giant tent, to have a great crab dinner. So not only do we have a Crab Fest during the day that's free of charge from 10 to 4. We also have crab races and so forth, a chowder cook-off at that time. And then at night we have a dinner for 250 people. So that's a pretty good start, I think.
So, Robert, are there some businesses that might have actually just stayed closed for the month of January, something that have reopened or at least expecting much better business with Crab Fest anticipated this weekend?
You know, I don't know that specifically. I know that we've got an ice cream shop that doesn't do a lot of business in the wintertime, of course. But down there, no, they're usually open. Most of them are owned by individuals. And their business is their life, so they're usually at the shops. There are a couple people that have charter boats and things like that that I understand that are looking forward to having the people here and may be available for that. But I don't know that specifically, no.
Again, Robert Gross, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, one of the organizers of Southern Oregon Crab Fest, the first ever coming to Brookings on Saturday. Join us on the Exchange if you have questions or comments. 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. We let you get off by just talking about crab races. Let's go into those in just a little depth now. How does that work?
You know what? What we're doing here is we race them six at a time, and you take the crabs, you put them up at the top of basically an 8-foot slanted table, and the people are to encourage the crabs to go down to the end to the finish line. And it's a lot of fun because there's always a lot of yelling and screaming. No touching the crabs, of course. We want to make sure that we honor those little guys. But it does get kind of exciting and competitive. competitive. So especially for the kids, we have we're going to let them name their crabs, and we're going to try to run it like a NASCAR race. And then at the end of the thing, for those that participate, they have nice tokens coming away from the Crab Fest. And of course, with those racers, once they're all done, they're actually going to be released to the ocean, so they get to go home after their races.
So for their efforts, they're not going to end up getting eaten.
Exactly. That was one thing. We're not going to eat the racers, so that's good.
That's very fair-minded of you. When you talk about it like a NASCAR race, they're not going to be slapping stickers or decals on the crabs.
No. Of course not. But it's nice because, especially, you know, for the kids, we want them to know where your food comes from, you know, and celebrating the crab. You know, we see it in the store sometimes, we see it in the tanks and things, but sometimes they don't get the whole experience. So with that, with the crab races, especially for the kids, we want them to have fun with it, be safe with them, of course, because they do have some pretty good claws, but enjoy it so that they can get into it. And if we can expose the kids to the crab lifestyle, to all the things that go around in this great little town, regarding the crab, that's a good thing. And for those that are coming from outside of the area, because obviously there's people all over that are listening right now, you know, that will give them the opportunity to see how a little fishing in Lumbertown, you know, tries to put on an event. And, you know, it's our first year. We probably could have sold 750 tickets for dinner, but we got to do what we're going to do right. So we're really planning on just doing the best entertainment we can, inviting people here to Brookings to spend the weekend with us and hopefully walk away with a smile on their face.
Since you mentioned you can only get 250 at the dinner, then are there other opportunities for people to eat crab over the course of the day?
Yes, absolutely. The crab boats will be selling cooked crab directly from the boat, which is nice. There'll be lots of food vendors, you know, everything from kettle corn to chowder to different cuisines, things like that. Of course, being off-season, there's a bit of a risk with the rain and so forth. So we had to make sure that we had tenting available for everybody that's there. So it's we're not talking about hundreds of vendors, but we are talking about the ones that be able to allow them to have some beer, eat some food, see some neat handmade stuff, and then visit the crab boats and learn about crab and buy crab and take it home if they want to or eat it right there at the docks.
So do you foresee lots of people walking around harbor with the little bibs and mallets?
We do have those, yes, and a lot of butter dripping down the face, so yes.
So, Robert, what would be a good benchmark? I mean, you must have made some estimates on, I mean, you know you're going to have 250 for the dinner based on ticket sales, but what are some estimates of what you'd like to bring in total attendance for Crab Fest? What would be a sign of success?
You know what? That's the question I've been asked a lot recently. I've got over 20,000 views on our Facebook page, which is amazing to me. I would, if we had 1,000 people show up, I would consider it a raging success. I think we're going to be able to get that much just from Brookings. The nice part is that we know that from talking to local hotels and motels and our ticket sales, we have people coming from as far away as Las Vegas. So, you know, if like I said, if we have 1,000 people show up, that to me would be a great first-year event. And that'll allow us to make sure that our you know, whatever we did right, and any mistakes that we made that we'd be able to correct next year. You know, a first-year event like this, my committee, I my goodness, they have worked so hard and in getting all the contacts and everything. And when you do it the first time, it takes a lot of work and effort. So we want to thank them for that and all the corporate sponsors that stepped up where, you know, there's no history of this event. You know, they stepped up and donated time and energy and money. So.
No history for this event, but any history for similar events? I mean, have there been other efforts to have large-scale midwinter events in Brookings before?
Not that I know of. I know in other cities they've done other smaller things. But no, I've only lived here 2 years. We used to vacation up here in Brookings and Gold Beach when we were younger, and we decided to move up here. So I don't have a whole lot of history with that. But in the 2 years I've been here, the season really doesn't start until the end of May.
All right, so that's when people actually do start showing up. So this is a bit of an experiment in a sense.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? We really want to do thank the city and the people that have gotten behind it to allow us to be able to do this because they have helped us in so many ways support wise to be able to, you know, show what we have here in Brookings because it really is. It's a wonderful town with great people. You know, we only have about 5,500 people here in the city, but they're a close knit group and especially. With the rich tradition and history, like I said, that we have with both fishing and lumber here, it'd be nice. It's a great show, a way to showcase the city, and that's what we're hoping to do, and also help the local businesses and things like that. You know, I don't know about other parts of the state, but you know, timber monies here have been a lot lighter than they have in previous years, and with the recession we've had, it's been tough on people. So we just want to invite people to come over here and have a good weekend, enjoy themselves, and experience Brookings.
And this is the port of Brookings Harbor, so just on the south bank of the Chetco.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct.
Starting what and time? On
it's going to start at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Crab races at 12. Chowder cook-off at 2. We'll be wrapping up at 4 o'clock. And for those that already have dinner tickets, it's starting at 6 o'clock. And then we'll be done by probably 9 o'clock that night. And next year, you know, we're talking about doing 2 days or maybe even 3 days. So far the reception has been great, but let's get the first one under our belt and have a good time.
All right, Robert Gross from Southern Oregon Crab Fest in Brookings, best of luck this weekend, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it, and you have a great day. Thanks for all you guys do.
You bet. Take care.
All right.
Bottom of the hour here on The Exchange, here's Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 23rd of January, 2014. It's the birthday of the architect Henry Mather Green, born Brighton, Ohio, 1870, who, along with his brother Charles, emigrated to Pasadena in their early 20s, where they designed homes in the arts and crafts style with some Japanese influences, and created a style of home that came to be known as the California bungalow. Simple, wooden, one-story, low-pitched roofs, balconies, porches. It was on this day, 1855, the first permanent bridge across the Mississippi was opened. It was in Minneapolis, a feat of engineering that connected Minneapolis on the West Bank to Nicollet Island to the village of St. Anthony on the East Bank. It's the birthday of the pharmacologist Gertrude Elion, born in New York City in 1918, went to work for the pharmaceutical company Burroughs Wellcome and formed a research partnership with Dr. George Hitchings that lasted more than 40 years. Over the course of her career, Gertrude Elion helped to develop drugs to treat leukemia, malaria, herpes, and AIDS, won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 1988. It's the birthday of the poet and playwright Derek Walcott, born on the Caribbean island of St. Lucia, north of Venezuela, in 1930. Derek Walcott, who said, "For every poet, it is always morning in the world, because the fate of poetry is to fall in love with the world in spite of history." And it's the birthday of the French novelist and essayist Stendhal, born Marie-Henri Bailey in Grenoble, France, in 1783. He wrote for journals and periodicals. He used dozens of pseudonyms, including William Crocodile, Old Hummums, and his famous name Stendhal. Published his first novel at the age of 44 and went on to write his masterpieces The Red and the Black and The Charterhouse of Parma. Stendhal, who said, "It is better to have a prosaic husband and to take a romantic lover." Here's a poem for today by Scott Owens, Cleaning House. Pulling the house down piece by piece, we see each other at our worst, before we've even had our first date, my face itching with black insulation, yours covered with white dust of sheetrock. We scrape off paint and paper, buff out spots, old glue, unexplained stains, remove tacky paneling, revealing forgotten charm, original beadboard hardwoods, solid ceilings. We're woefully unprepared, untrained, under-tooled, cutting off pipes with hacksaws, filling holes with toothpicks, Brillo pads, good wood pulled up from where it wouldn't be seen, an odd sort of courting really. Hammer and nails instead of flowers, microwaved hot pockets for meals, red wine in paper cups, all glasses still mysteriously packed away, ripping out rotted casements of windows, hollow doors, seven layers of floor. We sweat together, swear together, bend in unison towards the necessary destruction that always precedes renewal. Cleaning House, Scott Owens, from his collection Eye of the Beholder, published by Main Street Rag and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor on the Jefferson Exchange with today's edition of the Writer's Almanac, a daily feature of the Exchange. We'll take a short break. When we return, we hope to be talking to somebody from the National Center for Education Statistics about a recent report that showed student achievement in Oregon ranks 40th among the states and the District of Columbia. That's coming up on the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Please stay tuned.